Before this episode begins, please be aware that there were some recording glitches, so some portions will sound clipped or broken at times.
Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 446 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
All right. This is a mostly normal week, with the exception, of course, we lost Dan to Dan, so we've got double Blue Exorcist this week. I've also taken much fewer notes this time. I'm going to keep the story recaps for each episode very brief so that we have a little more time to kind of just talk about our favorite moments or things we want to mention and maybe help the podcast move a little quicker. But before that, let's talk about the news. We've got a couple of items here. First up, and we forgot to mention this last week, Genndy Tartakovsky dropped a new promo for Primal Season 3. Now, this is slated for Adult Swim. We don't know if it'll come onto Toonami or not. It could.
My assumption is that they'll premiere on Adult Swim and then show up on Toonami later, like previous seasons have. That's my assumption.
Yeah, that seems likely. I did see online, and I could be, I'm kind of paraphrasing from memory here, so I could be wrong, but I remember seeing a comment from Genndy Tartakovsky talking about the fact that, when they ended the second season, it ended with the protagonist dead. But he still wanted to do more. And so the solution was to make him a zombie.
Well, they've established zombies are already a thing in the world. But, first episode of season two, or maybe they were fighting a zombie or something. Or was it end of season one? I don't know. They were fighting a zombie at some point. So they've established zombies exist in this world. Though they've established gods exist and a whole bunch of shit. So given the world it is, zombies aren't out of the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Genndy called it like pulp. Like, this is going full pulp. He's just like, sure, let's have zombies. Why not? Which is interesting. I don't think anyone really expected this. So, like, we all remember that the end of the second season, it showed, like, Spears' daughter.
Yeah.
And we sort of assumed maybe there's her now or some sort of anthology or who knows what it's going to be. But apparently not.
I think he said it wouldn't be all zombie Spear all the time. I think... My understanding of what he said is that Spear's daughter will appear, but like not every episode will be about her. And I think there might be, I'm not sure if it's dual protagonists or like more than two, but I think it'll be a little bit of juggling the role, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah. As far as it going like more pulpy and more ridiculous, that doesn't bother me so much because, I mean, let's be honest, from the very first episode, we have cavemen and T-Rexes right next to each other. It was already pretty pulpy. You're not going to get scientific accuracy out of the show. So if they want to go crazy and have zombies and then dead, which again, like you said, they had already done that. So I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it definitely screams of like comic book horror type stuff. And I like the idea of Primal, the show, just being that, like just being like hardcore Primal stuff. So zombies is a way to do it. I am kind of surprised that they really want to continue to keep this character around even after the death. I don't know why that is. I mean, I can kind of see maybe there being a storyline between him and his daughter, something there happening even if, with him as a zombie. I think that's kind of interesting.
I did feel like his story was pretty very, very complete. Like there wasn't really much more to say about Fang. But like, I guess Tarkovsky disagrees.
Yeah, so Seda just posted a quote here. Do you want to read that, Seda?
Go ahead. Let me try to link this.
Okay. The quote, that the image you posted here, it says, this is from Entertainment Weekly. They are asking, we were left with this image at the end of season two of Spear and Fang's children picking up the mantle. Is it fair to say that season three's story involves those characters? To which he responds, it involves all the same characters that we've known from the second season. Without expanding on it, yeah, they're still around. So... this is a direct sequel.
I'm looking through this interview, which I linked to Yahoo link, but it's from Entertainment Weekly. And apparently he says, Primal is the purest 12-year-old Genndy thing I've ever done. Which is kind of an interesting you know,
yeah,
way to phrase it, just like dinosaurs and cavemen. It's an interesting twist, and I'm not sure if I'm fully on board, but I'm like, okay, it's definitely weird enough that I'm compelled enough to like, let's see what we got here.
Yeah, I'm not like a huge Primal fan, but I can watch it and enjoy it to a certain extent, and also be completely understanding the fact that I think it's high quality stuff. Like, I think it's really well made. It's certainly more interesting than that last thing he did, which I can't remember the name of.
Horse Eternal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that ended in a huge cliffhanger, didn't it? We're never getting sequel to that, are we?
Nah, I mean, that felt like, that whole thing felt like a
fever dream.
Yeah, I don't really remember how it ended because like 50 billion things happened in those last three episodes. And it was kind of like they're like flinging stuff on a wall.
Yeah, did Dark Force win and they're flung into the future of an alternate reality or something? And
it got really strange.
No, it seems like it was ambitious, but it didn't really follow through. So, the other piece of news I have here is that we also got what the lineup is going to be on November 1st, and it's a little interesting.
Yeah, so next week we have a marathon for Uzumaki. Again, this isn't new, but we still have an episode of Daima and Bleach. So those are still airing next week. And then the new lineup, which is the week after on November 1st, this is new. It's basically the same as what we got this week in terms of we have Dragon Ball, Bleach, Blue Exorcist, One Piece. And then they're just showing Foolie Shoegaze. They're just showing the whole thing, all the episodes. Because they have the bonus hour for daylight saving that week. That's when we fall back an hour. So they have like two extra shows they can run. So they're showing Foolie Cooley. Just why not, I guess. Someone mentioned this in the thread, and it is true. That is the finale of Dragon Ball Daima, and that is the finale of this season of Blue Exorcist. So they're both of those shows are airing their well, in Daima's case, series finale, and Exorcist's case, season finale.
Yeah, and then just to top off the rest of that, too, there's also, they're going to reshow a Rick and Morty short that they did called Rick and Morty versus Genocoder. And then, of course, they're going to end off at 3 a.m. with Naruto. So it's a pretty long block, obviously, because of the daylight savings. But yeah, with the Dragon Ball Daima and Blue Exorcist ending that week. I don't know what to think about this.
They have to have at least one new premiere. I know this time of year, and people have said it, and we've said it.
Yeah.
They tend to like drag their feet or procrastinate, waste time until like the new year. But I feel like, okay, you still have
7 weeks or something.
You still have like 1, 2, 3 weeks before Thanksgiving, and then you know a couple of weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, I don't know if you can procrastinate for 2 whole months. I feel like we have to get one new show at least.
Time for season 2 of Mastro.
Yeah, I don't know.
The thing is that like the shoegaze thing is odd to me because, okay, let's say they're using shoegaze to fill time, right? Of all the Foolie Cooley sequels, why that one? Why? I mean, there's a lot of reasons you could speculate on why they chose that particular one instead of say Grunge or one of the other ones. But
I think it's simply this: they needed to show one of the 3-episode ones.
That's true.
Shoegaze is better than Grunge.
Yeah,
so
that's a great point. Yeah, I should have thought of that. The 3-episode thing kind of that's the key, right? So yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, I'm glad they chose that one over Grunge. Grunge is not particularly well liked among even Toonami fans. But yeah, now obviously Blue Exorcist could continue. I think it's interesting they're doubling up still, maybe again for time to fill the block. But then it is interesting that like they're going to end out that season, even if they go into the next one, which we don't know if they will or not, but they might. Obviously doesn't have to go anywhere, as far as I know. I mean,
there's still a third season they haven't touched on yet. So
yeah, we still have like 12 or 13 or 14 episodes left of that.
Right. So we've got plenty to go there. I mean, I don't want to be super negative, but like they certainly put Bleach at the top of the block, have 2 more Blue Exorcists, have double One Piece. Would they still need another show, even if they did that?
What, double Blue Exorcist and double One Piece?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm bad with the timing. Is that still leave an empty slot or not?
Bleach, Blue Exorcist. Yeah, One Piece, Naruto. A short one.
Are you sure it's 7 or is it 6?
I can't remember.
Forget about the reruns. Yeah, Naruto is just hanging around there.
Oh, Dandadan would be rerunning, right?
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So,
or it's not rerunning, but it could.
Yeah, and very likely. I think it's likely it will be. I am surprised.
Well, they already started rerunning it, and then they're taking like a bit of a break for the Uzumaki, and then this daylight savings thing.
Yeah, I think it's likely that that will return. I kind of forgot that happened. So with that in mind, they could try to coast out the rest of the year doing something like that. Double Blue Exorcist, double One Piece. That seems extreme to me, but obviously I do feel like there is some merit to, and it was Grexino who kind of brought this up, the fact that, you know, this is the time of the year where they kind of wait to premiere things because the money doesn't arrive until the new year, potentially. I hope not. I'd love to see something new happen sometime in November, but I couldn't put it past them if they tried to, like, you know, run on fumes for a while. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, there are lots of options. Like, there, you know, obviously shows, you know, Dr. Stone, maybe Fire Force, who knows? Like, I know there's some rights issues or Crunchyroll being weird, but there are lots of options of shows that could show up, as addition to, of course, Mashal Season 2. So,
yeah, I think it's very likely one of those shows will show up. The question is, will it show up before January? I don't know. That's the question. And I think we have to kind of brace ourselves for the potential that it might not. And I'm just waiting to hear a lot of backlash from people who are like, oh my gosh, Toonami's back in the dumps again, when it might just be a timing thing. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I mean, this year has been the best year Toonami's had in a while. Like, just consistent. Like, I don't know, maybe you're not a big fan of Bleach or Blue Exorcist or whatever, but at least it had like those and Dandadan and Daima, just a handful of shows just to air for several months at a time.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the year was pretty dreadful from our recollection, but the middle of the year was like, okay, Toonami back form, basically.
Yeah.
Definitely.
We hadn't had this sort of stability in a while.
Exactly. So we'll buckle up and see. We still have to wait a little longer than we thought we were going to find out that because of this additional bit. We'll see soon. All right. Well, let's move on to the block proper then, and we will begin by talking about Dragon Ball Daima. Dragon Ball Daima, Episode 18, Awakening. Goku and Doo team up to fight, and they kind of fail. They don't really pull it off. They do some cool stuff, but it doesn't work. Neva shows up to power up Goku, and he turns into none other than the form that he had in Dragon Ball GT?
It's Super Saiyan 4.
I was wondering what that was called.
Final appearance Super Saiyan 4 in the Dragon Ball, like, canon, you know.
Like the proper canon.
Yeah.
We got those sort of like bare chest, like very tail and everything.
He returned to monkey. You know, to return to monkey.
Return to monkey. Yeah. That's basically what happened. Yeah.
I will say this version of Super Saiyan 4 is slightly different from GT version, the design. I don't need to get into the peculiarities, but it is slightly different.
Yeah. In GT, I know GT is not canon, but it's kind of framed as if, like, you know, back when Saiyans had tails, they could turn into like Great Ape. And like, what if they kind of turned into a great ape and then went like Super Saiyan, and then like it kind of manifests into like Super Saiyan 4? Like, it's some sort of, it's been a while since I've seen it.
You can be a great ape and turn into Super Saiyan. Like, that's been a thing before. But this is like,
yes,
this is like taking it further beyond, of course.
As, right. You know. So in here, it's just Neva just kind of just like gives him a boost, just kind of some sort of energy ball.
Yeah.
No. It's unlocking the potential, basically, is what I feel like is the best way to describe what happened.
Neva's kind of the plot device in this show to just sort of make things happen a lot of times. This is just another example of that. Also, by the way, like, even though this is a brand new show and one of the really good looking shows on the block, when he looks like this, it just feels like, oh, we've stepped back in time and now we're looking at something from like the early thousands. And just the look of him is like, he's like hot pink. He's got like the bare chest thing, and it's just so like over the top and ridiculous looking.
Yeah, welcome to Dragon Ball Z.
And by the way, I mentioned this last week. It was literally announced last week. They added this character. I'm going to link it here. They added it to the fighting game.
Yeah.
So that's what I was saying. Like, don't look at it. Don't look at announcements because it was announced last week. This version of Goku.
Dragon Ball FighterZ coming back is actually pretty huge, but that's probably for another podcast.
Yeah, so they added this version of Goku to their Z. So that's fun, I guess.
What an interesting coincidence.
Yeah.
It probably was a coincidence.
I mean, it has to be, right? Because
I'm pretty sure it was I think there was a Evo Brazil or Japan or
Evo France.
France, like somewhere that they announced it at like a fighting tournament. So
okay.
Because Dragon Ball Fighters Z is pretty big in France. It's like the most it's a region where the game is most popular. So you see that Evo France, even though it's left Evo Vegas, whatnot. And so obviously Bandai Namco took the time to an opportunity to make.
Well, yeah, I get that. What I'm getting at, though, is that is this yet just another crazy coincidence with Toonami?
I think so.
Yes, I'm like 95% sure it is.
Okay, it's interesting. It just seems to happen a lot sometimes. Okay, continuing on. Everyone, once they see like Goku has come back in Super Saiyan form, he's actually doing some damage again. This kind of gives everyone else the courage to step back in and start fighting again. Granted, they don't really pull anything off. They try, but they don't really help too much. And as a kind of last ditch effort, Goku pulls off a Kamehameha in this form, which I think Goma, you know, rightfully so, gets kind of worried about. He blasts them. But that's when he kind of comes back bigger and stronger, as that's what I refer to as Gigantamax Goma, where he's just super huge now, like a giant.
Yep.
And at this point, he's just kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, so it turned out the Super Saiyan 4 maybe didn't help. Or, I mean, it helped, but right now it's not working.
Well, the third Oculus is kind of just hacks, is basically the issue. Like, you see this for... Goma fight is pretty protracted because just the third Oculus is just like, nah, we don't lose over and over and over again.
And then, you know, this final section here is actually like, you know, a modest amount of intrigue in terms of Arinsu basically asks Glorio to basically like, well, we're between a rock and a hard place here. The only way we can get out of this is if you make me Demon King instead. And obviously that's like, sure, that might solve one problem, but we might create another. And of course, Glorio, that's how the episode ends. He makes a wish, or he says something. We don't know exactly what he says, because he says it in Namekian, because apparently he's been learning that.
Yeah. There was a bit, a while back, where he mentioned about needing someone to speak Namekian, and the camera, like, focused on Glorio for a bit. Like, I don't know if people remember that, but, like, I was like, oh, so they foreshadowed this a while back, like, so...
Yeah, it's kind of like a last ditch, you know, like option to like, you know, this might solve the problem, but.
Well, it's they did a very. I was going to say they did a very creative edit for the promo where they hide exactly what the wish was. However, from everyone else's characters' reactions and comments, it's pretty clear what happened. So I'm not going to talk about it, but you can just take a guess. But anyway, the thing that kind of confused me in this moment, though, that I wanted to mention was I kind of was like, why is she asking him to do this? Like, why doesn't she just make the wish? And I kind of realized, oh, it's because I guess she doesn't speak the language. And you have to know not only the language, but you need to know like the password or whatever. And it's all in Namekian. So I guess she doesn't know that.
Yeah, she even mentions kind of offhandedly, like, why do you think we had you learn Namekian?
Oh, okay.
Or like, you had to learn Namekian for this. And like, why didn't you learn it yourself?
It was up until that point where I was just going like, why are you putting all this, like, he can so easily backstab you here. Why are you doing this? And I guess she didn't have a choice.
She was too busy getting her hair done, making Majin moves.
Yeah. It looks great. I mean,
we also didn't talk about Super Saiyan 3 Majin Buu. Or whatever.
Well,
that was.
This is okay. So that was the end of the episode. We cover everything. So let's go ahead and go back and talk about those things. So go ahead, Seda. What were you going to say?
There's just during the first part of the battle in this episode, Majin Ku gives Majin Du a cookie, and there's
giant cookie.
There's kind of a fun, you know, kind of a tag team here between Majin Du and Super Saiyan 3 Goku, kind of. Fighting. I noticed my connection and might be a little weak, so I apologize if I'm sounding weird. But so he does like his stretchy arm kind of stuff while Goku, you know, punches and whatnot. It's not a very long sequence, but it's kind of a fun little sequence with Goku and him.
Definitely the most entertaining part of it is when Majin Du like gets the Super Saiyan 3 hair and tries to mimic Super Saiyan 3 Goku.
Yeah, that was fun.
One moment I would like to mention is that I thought it was something I appreciated was when Dragon appeared. It's a giant red Piranga, basically. And Goma's like, ah, fuck you, I'm not letting you make a wish. And Goma tries to, you know, strike down a dragon, which makes complete sense. But a dragon just bats him away like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Even with Goma having the third eye, the dragon doesn't, I don't give a shit. Fuck off. And he just pursues the wish.
So
I thought, like, hey, good for Goma for being, like, a proactive villain to actually, like, stop, you know, the good guys from plotting against, you know, a lot of villains just sit there and do nothing. He's like, no, fuck that shit. I'm not going to let you do your plan. But then the dragon's like, fuck you. I don't give a shit. And the plan's happening.
And then we have to discuss, how does the power levels work when you talk about these, like, super high beings? Like, we have, what, God of Destructions, and then you have their guardians. And where do dragons fall in on this scale? I don't know. How strong are they? Invincible?
Could be. I mean, they definitely have the ability to alter reality.
How strong do you have to be to fight a dragon?
Yeah, I mean, they may not be fightable. They may be more like a force of nature that is, you know, you just have to accept it.
Well, we do know that the dragons do have power levels, because I remember the Piranga on Earth, like, before Dende took over, it was, like, I think weaker than Saiyan Saga Vegeta. Like, I remember that being a plot point. So, like, the dragons have power levels and can, like, become more or less powerful over time and whatnot. So,
yeah.
This Red Piranga is obviously peak dragon and whatnot, as opposed to the Shenron back in the early Dragon Ball Z, who's kind of weakling, relatively speaking.
If there's anything I've learned from Daima, as far as its world building is concerned, it feels like the dragons are more like a spell that the Namekians can create or cast. And they're super powerful, but as far as we can tell, they appear, or maybe he only makes the Dragon Balls, I don't know, but Neva has some ability or some connection to these things, so.
But yeah, we're starting to talk like about different planes of existence here.
Yeah.
It gets tricky.
And we know that, of course, that the dragons have rules about certain things they can and can't do, but again, it's like, I kind of think of them more like gravity or some other force of nature in the universe. It's like they just have this ability and you're not really in a position to, you can't say, well, I don't want to walk. I want to walk on a ceiling unassisted. You can't do it. The law of gravity prevents it. It must be similar where it's like, I want you to wish this. And they're like, nope, can't do that.
I admit I'm sort of joking.
Oh yeah. I think it's interesting though.
I mean, the rules are set by whoever creates the dragon, I'm pretty sure.
The question, though, is, did they create the dragon, or did they create the balls that can summon a dragon? I don't know.
Oh. It's a little chicken-egg kind of thing?
Yeah, well, maybe not so much that. Like I said, if you go with my theory, this is my big brain theory, that the dragons exist as part of the universe, the dragon balls may simply be a way of summoning them. And they're only connected in that regard. The dragon doesn't come from them.
I don't think I've ever seen a dragon outside the context of a dragon ball.
But that doesn't mean that dragon balls make them be. So I don't know. I feel like my theory sounds pretty good right now.
I think, unfortunately, the only person who would answer this question is dead. So,
or we missed something in the decades that this show has been on. So, all right. Any other amazing or interesting notes we want to talk about in this episode? I will finish up by just saying quickly that I thought this was a fun episode. We're deep into the fight stuff now, and you know, we still have two more to go, right? And
yeah.
It feels pretty clear what's going to happen here. We're going to have the final showdown, and then there's probably going to be an episode that's like a wrap up episode. So, all right. Well, then let's move on to the next show on our block, Bleach. Bleach Thousand Year Blood War Core 2, Episode 8, The Headless Star. Headless Star? What does that mean? Did someone lose their head? I don't remember that.
One of the Stern Raiders can...
Zell kind of did.
Okay.
But I don't think the episode title is about her. I assume it's about Ichigo.
Yeah.
Because he's number one.
Okay, we'll have to think of that. But anyway, let me go over the quick rundown. We only got six bullets on this one. Stern Ritter's GP, Z, and T gang up to fight and thus defeat Kenpachi. Now, if you don't remember, these are the Barbies, as they're called.
It's Lito, Menias, Giselle, and Candace.
Yeah.
I just posted the names for reference in the chat.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of like Candace Catnip, though. That's an interesting name. Okay. So we'll talk about their powers in a little bit. Let me just run through this real quick. So Ichigo then suddenly arrives to dramatic rock remix of the song Number One. I'm not going to lie. Pretty freaking hype. Then our female Sturmriders all get magical girl transformations and become more powerful. I didn't expect that. Then Baz B and a bunch of other male Sturmriders show up, as do a bunch of Soul Reapers show up, which I'm assuming is going to lead into the next episode with a bunch of huge battles. They don't fight yet, but they're like kind of standing off against each other. However, Yuha Baha reveals that this was all part of his plan. Ichigo coming back has left the way open for him to get up into the super heaven, and his whole plan all along has been to kill the Soul King. So now he has access to do that because of the opening or whatever that Ichigo fell through remains open for like 60 seconds or 90 seconds or something.
They said 6,000 seconds.
Oh, 6,000. It was a very specific number.
I think they said 6,000 seconds, which is actually 100 minutes.
That's a long time then. Oh, yeah.
I thought he said 10 minutes because that makes more sense, but I admit I wasn't doing the math super.
No, it was done in seconds, and it was like a goofy number. Like,
I'm 6, pretty 5. Sure he said 6,000 seconds.
I believe you.
But also, like, how does he know this? Like, how do I know that if someone falls through the 72 gate thing and it opens, it stays open as long?
I think I know why, but to expound upon that would probably be a spoiler. Okay. So I'll just leave it at that.
The only thing I can think of is that this must have happened once before.
Well, who said that though? Was it Yuha Baha that said that?
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure.
Yes, it was a big.
Right. Well, I can give him the benefit of the doubt. He knows a lot, so
yeah, he's lived a long time.
Yeah, he's lived 1,000 years, so he knows what he's talking about. And the final thing we have here in the rundown is as he's about to go up, suddenly bursting into the scene is Orihime and Chad. They're suddenly back in new costumes.
I'll change the order a bit. Ichigo confronts Uryu, who's like, yeah, I'm evil now. And Ichigo's like, are you evil? And Uryu's like, I'm evil now. And Ichigo's like, you can't be evil. Are you evil? And then so like Uryu, I think, fires a few shots. And then Chad blocks it. And then Orihime also comes and blocks another one with a boob window in front of the camera. And then I guess Ichigo's like, Uryu, are you evil? And Uryu like just silently walks away and then goes off you about.
Yeah, Ichigo cannot believe that his friend has been turned. And that's how the episode ends. So let's talk quickly. I kind of want to talk a little bit about these Sturmritters. So GP, Z, and T. So I forget what the letters stand for. Like Z is for zombie, because that's one of her powers.
The glutton, the power, and I think T is the thunder.
G is gluttony.
Because Lilito has that, can eat anything. Menenias is like has super strength, even though she just looks like a normal girl. And then obviously Giselle is a zombie, and then Candace has electricity power, so that's why she's the thunder.
They were kind of fun. I mean, like the Thunder Girl is just like really hot-headed.
My favorite moment with her was one of the other girls is like, we need to calm down, and she's like, bite me, and charges again. I thought that was fun.
I think I really liked the Glutton Girl though, because she was just like kind of Wednesday Adams-ish. She was just very deadpan the whole time. She's like, oh, there's that guy again. You know, kind of like that. And it was really fun.
I get my paycheck.
And she had, but her power's really freaking weird. Like half her mouth comes out and bites you. Zombie Girl, she was fun because she's kind of like crazy. She's like, oh no, you got my blood all over you. I guess you're going to be a zombie now. And she's like really goofy. And I don't remember what the fourth girl is like. What was she like? I forget.
She's like heart powers.
Power, or she was just kind of like cute and bubbly and punch girl. I don't know. There wasn't too much to her, but
she was like the sweet one.
She was basically a lot like what was that girl from Demon Slayer? Was name I'm blanking on?
Oh yeah, yeah, from the last season we watched. Yeah,
okay. Love Hashira. That's right.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Love Hashira.
Okay, fine. But yeah, that's a similar character archetype, basically.
Yeah, tough love, literally.
They're actually relatively strong enough to beat down Kenpachi. Now, granted,
yeah, Kenpachi was literally in the vacuum of space like 10 minutes ago. So,
yeah, they did good, and they got their magical girl for transformations, which turned them even more powerful.
Kind of an interesting twist, you know, in a way, though, where that finger guy shows up and, like, literally shoots them. Yeah, because he's like, I want to take down Ichigo. So, and this is what eventually leads to what you said before, where a couple more Stern Ritters show up, then more Soul Reapers come up. So we have, like, I don't know, like, 7 Stern Ritters and 7 Soul Reapers, including Rukia, Byakuya, and Renji all there about to face off.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. I mean, I think a couple of these other Stern Ritters, we might have seen them before, but I mean, we haven't seen much of them. There was one guy with a gun, and I don't really know what his deal is yet.
He's been around before.
I'm sure they've all been shown before. I'm just saying, like, in no, like, major way have we seen them. So I'm looking forward to see if they do anything interesting. So,
and obviously not all of the Stern Ritter are equally as important or powerful. So,
right. Yeah. There's an opportunity here for them to square off with a choice Soul Reaper to have a fight. So, yeah. And the Uryu thing, I still don't know. I mean, like, I don't know if he's drinking the Kool-Aid or not. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, apparently he learned something that we don't know yet.
I will say I've enjoyed how Shima's turn heel turn. Is that the right word? I've enjoyed Shima's heel turn more, or at least I feel it's been better executed than Uryu's heel turn so far.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, and we got a shot of what's his face in this episode too for like a second. The bad guy from Bleach, the main guy that's in the dungeon right now.
Oh no,
Aizen?
Aizen, yes, Aizen. Yeah, he was in this for like 1 second.
I don't remember that. They showed the Stern Ritter that looks like Aizen.
People in the thread mentioned it there. Hey, look, it's Aizen.
Oh, I must
have. It's definitely a moment with Aizen coming up soon. It's kind of hilarious. One thing I want to say about the Magical Girl transformations, I was kind of disappointed in terms of like the outfits didn't really change that much. You know, when you're going the whole transformation, like stock skeleton noise or something, like that was actually pretty funny.
There's a we talked about this last week, and this is when Crocodile left, but we were talking about how there's a I'm actually gonna link it here. There's a character who kind of looks like Aizen, who's a little confusing. It's like, wait, that looks it's not him, and you can, if you look hard enough, it's like you can see he's not exactly the same, but he's got the similarities. Like, that's not Aizen, that's some other guy with a similar like bang that goes down his face or whatever. So
It's a hair thing.
If he didn't have that name above it in this picture you just posted, I would say that's Aizen. I mean, it just looks like him. Oh, by the way, I want to mention too that the thing you said just a moment ago, Crocodile, though, about the skeleton noises. Yeah, I've been watching all of Toonami with the captions on. I usually don't like watching things with captions, but I think it's really helpful for taking notes. And when the skeleton started attacking in the captioning, it just had in parentheses cartoon noises.
That's great.
So, and that's exactly what it were.
Was this Chad and Orihime's moment blocking one attack? Will they do anything else? I feel like this is most of the series for them. They for being like main characters, they don't do much at all.
You know, it's funny is I was thinking about that too, and they show them in the opening, and they're just literally like Orihime's just on her phone, and Chad is just leaning against the wall, and I'm like, yep, that's pretty much checks out.
Kubo needs 2 more characters, and so he has enough room for basically Chad and Orihime.
Yeah, it's sad, but she did get a new boob windowed outfit that apparently people are not hot on because it's very too revealing. It is a thing, I will say.
I was going to say something, but they remember to cut from the manga. Because I was going to say there are definitely people who are fans of that, who you might not be expecting fans of that, but it was cut from the anime anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got 2 episodes of Blue Exorcist this week, and we're going to start with the first one. So let's begin. Blue Exorcist, the Shimane Illuminati Arc, Episode 9. Help me. Crocodile's got to head out too. So thank you for being here, Crocodile, and we'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure. Have a great night, guys.
Yeah, see ya. So I only have like 3 bullets here. We've got Gedwin is talking down to the people who are captured. He basically reveals that this thing that he's been working on this whole time is an immortality elixir. And I think he said that before. So I wanted to write it down, make sure it was said in our podcast. So yeah, all these experiments, all these zombies, he's making everything, even having them use the Nine Tails, is all part of a big experiment for him to create an immortality elixir that he's going to give to Lucifer. So just FYI. And he gets one of his zombie monstrosities to come up. He's implanted a bit of that elixir formula that's not really working right into the zombie, and it explodes, and it ends up like making it turn into like a giant, like Akira monster. He calls it zombie doping. He actually goes into a whole like explanation about that, about like turning it into like a big, like it's like doping in like sports.
Only zombies.
We get a brief moment of Renzo and Rin kind of confronting each other here. Of course, Rin is all like, what's your deal? Why are you acting like this? Stop doing this. And Rin is, or Renzo's like, what are you talking about? This is who I am. And I mean, he continues to make it very, very clear in this episode that this isn't mind control. This isn't, he's not in a double agent. I think this is just, this is the path he's chosen. He's just going to do his own thing. This is what, this speaks to what you said last week, Seda, about how like he's kind of indifferent about who wins.
There's a part in the second episode too that I think might add some clarity here.
Okay. You'll have to refresh my memory because I don't remember that. But yeah, but like the point being is that like at this point, it's just very, he's very much like, I'm just going to do my own thing is what he says. And he kind of is on his way out there. Rin and everybody's there to save Izumo. And she's like, no, I'm not going to let you save me. I don't want to be saved. I'm going to let this happen. I'm going to take over the fox demon. And I'm going to kill everybody in the institute. I don't need anyone's help to do it. This is the climax of her character arc where she's basically like, I can do this on my own. Right? This is the kind of the tip of that. And Getowin makes her wear this weird mask that somehow technology is used to make her more compatible with the fox demon or susceptible to it. I don't know why that works, but it's a thing. Yeah. And then as that she puts that on, she starts to get possessed by the Nine Tails. The Nine Tails kind of leaves her mom. I didn't realize she still had it. I guess she did, but it leaves her mom and goes into her. And yeah. And to no one's surprise, she can't handle it. It easily takes her over and she starts suffering. Mm-hmm. And during this sort of like moment, while she's fighting the demon, this is when she kind of like, we get the climax, like I said, the big climax of her character arc here, where she suddenly realizes that she does have friends. She needs to embrace her friends if she's going to get through this. She has to stop being try to operate solo. And then the episode ends with Rin. It's not quite Luffy One Piece-esque, but it's close. Rin giant punches Getowin in the face and knocks him down.
It's a bit cartoony.
Yeah, he's got like the big, like cartoonish, like big bulb on his face and stuff. I wanted him to be defeated, but he doesn't quite get defeated. But he does get a nice punch from Rin. So that's the quick rundown of this episode.
Yeah, so Izumo's character, I like it. It is a little bit demeaning, but it's a little bit stereotypical where, like, of course, she realized that she was her time spent with the other students, that she had become friends with them. And, you know, to them, in their eyes, she was their friend. She never saw them that way. And then she just kind of realized, you know, we expected her to, that, like, no, actually, the reason why these guys, is kind of a weird way to frame it, but from her viewpoint, but, like, the reason why it annoyed me when the way she framed it was like, when they annoy and like tease each other, the reason why it annoyed me is because like they should be friends, and then realizing I'm a friend with them also. Mm-hmm. Kind of a weird way to like have that realization. But from her kind of perspective as sort of this, you know, as the type of character she is, she has that realization. She still has a hard time admitting it in the next episode, but
yeah.
To herself, she's admitted it, that no, we are friends.
Right. And I mean, I can give it a little bit of a break because this is literally her whole life, right?
Yes.
Like her whole life, she has been conditioned over and over and over again by many terrible people to believe that she can't rely on anyone. So it's a hard habit to break. So I give her that. You know, for us watching as a third party or for her friends in the story, why are you like this? But you got to look at it through her perspective that like she has been so betrayed so many times, it would be hard to trust people. You're right. Inside, she's kind of agreed to it. She's crying. And you know, Rin's being Rin. He's like, and everybody really is all there. We're like, we're here to help you.
It was kind of amusing when right before he punched Gadooine, he says, "Was you made her cry," and punches him. So, yeah.
Is there anything else in this episode before we move on to the next one?
No.
Okay, that's kind of it. There wasn't like I'm sure there's some minor details I missed, but that's the big picture stuff. So let's go into the next episode. That's episode 10, Friends. And before I go over the rundown on this episode, I just want to say really quickly, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, more, but this feels like season finale.
Yeah.
Very much like a season finale, to the point where I was questioning it.
Right. I'm a little confused. I know we'll talk about it, but like there are two episodes left of season. This felt like the end, or like maybe one episode left, but two left? There's two left, right? Like
there are two more left.
That it seems confusing. Like, wait, I know there's more Blue Exorcist and they have to like somehow lead it to the next season, right? But still, just let me put it this way. A lot happened in this episode that I was expecting to take more time.
It was all very wrapping up too. Like all the stuff that happens is very much a wrap up. And I think part of the reason it feels so rushed to a bit is what's kind of the very first thing that happens in this episode. So I'll run through it here real quickly. So the Ninetail does completely take over Izumo. She ends up actually kind of fighting Rin a little bit. She's got like claws and like fangs and stuff. She kind of goes crazy and nobody's really sure what to do about this because it's so powerful. And then it's Izumo's mom. And she's like, "My darling daughter, I'll take it back." And then she like transfers the demon into herself and says that if I die, the demon will die with me. And that's what happens. And I just have to, let's just stop for a second and talk about this. Cause like, it wasn't just the other people in the thread were like, "Wow, that was easy. That's it. Yeah. That's all it takes."
Yeah. Cause it's like, wait, what would have happened had Gizmo's mom just died, I don't know, a month ago, with Foxy dead?
If the fox is just dead, the fox demon, like, why did they have it stored in some stone for hundreds of years or whatever? Like, I don't know. It just seems like that's way too easy. And her ability to do this, she could have ended her own suffering. I don't know. This is really weird.
Yeah. And like I said, like, so the fox demon was in Izumo's mom for a long time, right? And Izumo even says that she's been fighting it for 5 years. And I don't know, like, what is the fox demon's, like, sense of self-preservation here? Like, if this ghost dies, then I die? I'm not sure how it works. Like, the logic.
I can only rationalize it by the fact that the fox demon doesn't actually die. It just leaves. But they did say that. So, I don't know. I mean, I get the mom sacrificing herself for her daughter. I get that. And I don't know. This all just felt a little too easy is all I'm getting at. So
yeah,
it's some complaint. I'm going to just be straight about it. That bothered me. It's not terrible. It didn't ruin anything for me, but I just felt like I really wanted to see Izumo take over the fox and control it and be like the first in her family to do it. And we didn't get that. Gadooine. And he starts turning into a giant blob monster to attack everybody. He's the final boss, not the demon. It's him.
What I mentioned in the previous episode, there's a moment here around when Gadooine is like starting to go crazy, where Shima kind of backs off, and Shima gets like a call from his superior, and his superior who are like in the Illuminati. I forget exactly what they say, but they basically say like, "No, leave Gadooine alone for now. Like, don't help him. Just like, let him do his thing." And he's like, "Gladly." So my point is Shima doesn't care about Gadooine, and apparently the rest of the Illuminati probably don't feel great about Gedwin either. Now he's making this elixir and apparently is, you know, has something to do with Lucifer even being alive and how that even works. So he's not like useless, but my point is it feels like the Illuminati don't really care about Gedwin as a person, and Shima has no loyalty to him. Shima has loyalty to like his superior in the Illuminati. And there seems to be a little bit of, you know, internal conflict there that they kind of Gedwin seemed more like a necessary, you know, like, we don't like him, but we have to have him because of his research or whatever.
Right.
So now later on, we know that, trying to remind me, Shima takes Gedwin later, like they take his body. Is that right?
He does, yeah.
But like, so they, who knows what they plan on doing. But my point was, we were talking about like Shima, what is he trying to do, and like who is he loyal to? And right now I think he's just like, you know, he's kind of just playing along with his not playing along how the right way to phrase it, but he's doing what his superior kind of wants him to do, and he's sort of a yes man in that sense. I don't know if he actually like has his own convictions that he cares about.
I mean, I think he does have convictions, and the impression I get is that his convictions are whatever he wants. And that I think like working for the Illuminati kind of gives him the freedom to do what he wants, but I don't feel like he's 100% like loyal to even his whoever that is he's talking to. Like, I feel like he's just doing it because that's what he's told, but he's a mystery character to me because he isn't falling into the trope. And that's what's confusing to me. Like, I was just thinking, like, when this episode ended and they showed the ending sequence, which was very shiny, like, you know, these dark stuff happening. Although in this episode, it's kind of nice, but like the previous episode ends really darkly. And then like get this happy music and the cutesy little chibi versions of our cast. But the ending does end on a shot of like a photo of the whole class and he's in it. And I'm like, okay, I get that photo was probably taken a while back, but like, does the show want me to believe that he's still their friend or not? And there's so much in this episode about everybody, particularly Rin, being like, what are you doing? You're our friend. It's like if the writing is trying so hard to make our characters care about him still, like, are we as the audience supposed to feel that way? I don't know. Because everything they're doing with his character seems to suggest that he is just straight up not on their side. And if they went down that road, I think that's interesting. Like, introduce a character who's supposed to be your friend's character and then turns out later to be a bad guy. That's interesting.
I kind of see him something like a mercenary, maybe. You know, not really a mercenary, but like right now, he's like, right now, at this particular moment, my interests align with the Illuminati. But yeah. I could easily see it maybe where he's like, that might not always be the case. And some, you know, if there's some other different whim that I want to follow or whatever, he might do that. But yeah, just, I don't know if he actually cares about the Illuminati's mission. He's just kind of, you know, in the ranks,
right,
following orders.
But the problem is he doesn't care about his friends.
Right.
And like, he's willing to let terrible things happen to, you know, anyone, to everyone, Izumo in particular. And it's like, you're kind of at the point of no redemption. You know what I mean? Like in his character,
he did let,
he saw Rin. Yeah.
He saw Rin get absorbed into the blob monster and he like, didn't care. But then later on, they do say that he like went, I don't know how they phrase it, but like he did not kill Uke and Mike, the two fox demons.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that was intentional or what, but they're not dead.
You know, he could have done more to a certain extent is what they said.
Yeah.
So, like, he held back there. I think he also, like, I don't remember the details, but in this episode or the previous episode, I forget, he let someone go. Like, he had the opportunity to catch someone and he deliberately didn't, which is another, like, huh, kind of moment where I'm like, oh, well, okay. Why is he helping kind of? He's a mystery.
He goes on whims.
Yeah, he just goes with the flow. Oh, yeah. Uke and Mike show up. They weren't destroyed. They are there to fight by Izumo's side once again. And they go full on super powerful, that they actually turn into like a humanoid anthropomorphic form where they're like, you know, fox people, and they attack and they're very powerful. Izumo, meanwhile, uses this crazy hand that he uses to defeat Gedoin. I was thinking about this, by the way, real quick, the chanting in this show. I have to assume a lot of this stuff must be in the manga, because these go on for like 20 seconds and it's like gibberish to me. And it's like, well, how, the voice actors didn't make that up, I don't think. So it must have been written down. Mm-hmm. It's just really interesting.
I can say is I bet that's, you know, part of, you know, the heritage or the culture of, I don't know whatever. If that's Shinto or whatever Japanese classic culture that is, where they have these, like, it's like a prayer, only, you know, like, you know, we have prayers in, you know,
yeah,
Christianity or whatever. I assume it's Japanese, or maybe it's Buddhist, or who knows, but you know, some sort of prayer or chant that is, you know, that has like meaning. And yeah, it's more than just like a whole, like you said, 20-30 seconds chant.
Yeah, it's long, and they a lot of the characters do those. That's interesting.
Suguro has done this too.
So, like you said, they defeat Gedoin, and he kind of turns into like a little mini squid version of himself, to the point where even girl's like, "Ooh, I hate squids," and it's like scared of it or whatever. And that's when Shima grabs him and takes him. Like maybe he was ordered to, I don't know, but he takes the limp, dissolved body of Gedoin with him.
Like I said, it seems like the Illuminati may not really like Gedoin, but he's you know, we know he's responsible for Lucifer still being alive. So like they probably need him in some regard.
Yeah.
So they want him back.
And my notes here say still evil question mark. And I'm still, yeah, that's just, I'm like, what is the deal with this guy, Shima? Are they going to, is that the next arc, the redemption of Shima? I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Kinzo and the Kyoto people suddenly arrive. Remember them from the last season?
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, they're here. The little like crazy snake girls and everybody else, they all show up and they're like, we're here to help. And they kind of like, and this is where the episode just suddenly goes into like turbo mode with the wrap up. Yeah. Like we get a ton of like montages of everything being cleaned up and read and finished up.
Yeah, it was a little bit like, I'm actually a little bit disappointed that they kind of crammed all this into one episode. I felt like I wanted more room for this stuff to breathe, because this is like the mm-hmm. climax. So yeah, I will say it. Like I was sort of looking forward to this moment, and I'm a little disappointed because it's just so, I felt like this episode was a bit overstuffed, and we haven't even talked about, you know, like the reunion scene, which is like also crammed into this episode.
Yeah.
Just a lot happens.
Like, we got like two big scenes at the very end. The first is the sort of like Izumo and Shimi sort of like hospital scene where they just sort of like open their hearts to each other, and Izumo's still in her like very like closed off way of acting, mm-hmm. very tsundere way, but at the same time she's just crying like rivers of tears down her face, making it pretty clear how she really feels. Shim's being very sweet to the point of actually being kind of aggravating to both Izumo and the viewers, where she's like, I don't care, you're nice, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's just her.
And I think, to me, the most important, or the most, I guess, interesting part of this scene was we learned what Paku said to Shiami.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking it was going to be like some sort of plot thing, you know, like she knew something or whatever, but it's not actually a plot thing. Paku was just being a really good friend and saying, hey, Izumo is actually jealous of you, that you guys can have, you know, your full range of emotions. You can laugh, you can cry, you can whatever, but Izumo's felt like she's never been able to. She's not allowed to, because of, you know, her mission for herself and whatnot. And so Shiami kind of says, like, seeing Izumo cry now actually makes Shiami happy. Like, mm-hmm. that Izumo is allowing herself to cry. So yeah. That's kind of, you know, the crux of this thing is, obviously Izumo is still, you know, she's still a tsundere, and she's like, you know, how dare you cry or whatever, like, don't cry for me. But you know, that's how she's gonna be, and they're clearly closer now than they were at the end of last season, where last season Izumo was literally like, I hate you. So
I actually like this scene a lot. I mean, I actually think this
really
is
good.
And I agree. I even though I also thought that the secret message was going to be more important to the plot, but I think what they did here is fine. I like that. It kind of like, it's more about the resolution of her character arc and her like coming to grips with like her new self. And I think they've kind of really made it, they kind of had their cake and eat it too here, where obviously Izumo is now a changed person, but it's only on the inside. So we get to continue to have her be her tsundere way. But at the same time, we know that she really does care and that she feels like she can actually trust people now, which is nice. And then that leads into the final scene that you talked about, where we learned that, yes, Tsukumo is alive. I was mistaken. I think a couple episodes back, I think I said that Gedoin and the Illuminati knew where Tsukumo was. But no, I was wrong. Apparently, the woman that had helped Izumo out had actually snuck Tsukumo away and put her in a foster family. And so Izumo kind of sees her little sister is living a very, very wonderful life with the head of some CEO. And apparently that CEO is a he's the CEO of a company owned by Mephisto. I thought that was interesting, weird connection.
And it was like related to that Takuma guy. Like, so she's like my younger cousin or whatever, you know, like cousin, like adopted cousin or whatever. So like not actually related, but you know, she's adopted into the family that he's apparently like part of that family somehow. But yeah. And so it's a kind of a, it's a little bit of a bittersweet reunion because Tsukumo was so young when she left. I think Izumo says she was 3. And so of course when like, you don't have memories of when you're 3, or at least not very clean ones at all. So she didn't really even remember Izumo at all. So it's, you know, bittersweet that Izumo sees her sister kind of thriving and happy, but she can't be a part of that.
Yeah, and she even says that. Yeah, she says it's like, and says it to others as well. She's like, I'm so happy to see my daughter, or my daughter. I'm so happy to see my little sister, but I'm heartbroken that she doesn't remember me. And it's unfortunate. The only thing that kind of made me chuckle in that moment is that I would have thought Tsukumo would have looked at her sister Izumo and just said, hey, our eyebrows are the same, but she doesn't say that because it's kind of a tell. I mean, come on, how many people have that? But no, it was nice. I mean, it's good for Tsukumo, I guess. She's safe. And Izumo, again, this is like really kind of end of character arc for her, because there's really not met us. She's just now a whole new person at this point, like as far as like her life goals and everything, right? I mean, she obviously probably still hates Gedoin to the point that she's want revenge or something, but at the same time, you know, her little sister's safe. She doesn't have to work on that anymore. And she's changed from the inside. So yeah, it was a very, very good episode, I think, overall, as far as like dealing with her character arc, but it was rushed. And it was not the end episode of the season, which is so odd, because it ends just like, this is a better season finale than the last season finale. And this isn't the season finale. So it's really weird.
Yeah. I still really wish, I think this episode could have easily been split into two. Like there was a lot that happened in this episode. And I was actually, when I was watching it, I don't know, it felt like they started like speed running some of this stuff. And not only that, but the whole, like, the whole conflict with the Fox kind of not really making any sense. And like, it almost felt like they didn't know what to do when they wrote, whoever the mangaka is wrote like story arc, they didn't know how to conclude it. So it didn't really conclude very satisfying. Like, it's concluded, but it's like, I don't know. Just, it was that easy. It felt like this could have happened at any time. Like, why did this happen now? If this could have happened a year ago or 2 years ago, or, you know, I don't know. It just seemed weird.
The mom solving the whole solution to everything in like 10 seconds is a real black eye on an otherwise fine episode. Like, and I think the ending of this episode I really enjoyed. But yeah, when I go back and think about that scene where the mom just solves everything and no one knew it was going to happen, it's just like, oh man, that felt really shoehorned in. That's unfortunate. And to kind of speak to what you said about like everything being rushed, I guess it's very possible that we're going to see more of her character relationships, because like we haven't seen her like since everything's been resolved, we haven't seen her interact with Rin or anyone else yet either. So maybe she's going to do that in the next episode. But and I, obviously, like you said, we're going to probably be setting up for whatever the next big thing is in the final episode, I forget, what was the name of the next arc? It wasn't Blue Night. It was something else.
Blue something. I mean, of course, it went Blue Winter.
No, it was like the Blue Night is the name of the final season, but the next season is called like the Winter something or something. Snow something. I forget.
Yeah. But like in terms of like larger plot stuff, there's obviously plenty of things that need to be expounded upon. Like we know that you're trying to merge the demon world and the human world. Toto is still out there as part of the Illuminati, and Lucifer is still out there. The next season is called Beyond the Snow.
Yeah. So, wintertime. We haven't seen wintertime. So we got that to look forward to. And I don't know what that's about. But that's most likely going to get set up in the next, if not the next episode, the last episode of the season. So, all right. Anything else about this?
I don't think so. No. With two episodes left, see what happens.
I hope we get a little more Izumo stuff here in this. It's not just all set up for the next arc. So, all right. Let's move on to the final episode of the night. One Piece. One Piece episode 749. The sword technique heats up. Law and Zoro finally appear. It sounds like that's written by a fan. Zoro and Law finally appear.
It's only been two episodes.
That's true. The last episode felt like 10, but okay.
All of you to do.
Everyone decides to escape. So basically, Desire gives a rousing speech to all the miners and is like, hey, idiots, you know, you don't have to live down here and suffer for the rest of your life. You could try to escape. And they're like, oh, okay, yay, we'll do that. And then that's when the guy with the big cannons on his back shows up. His name is Pesetta. And his gimmick is that he thinks everything is incredible. He uses the word incredible in all his speeches. Mm-hmm. And he just shoots cannons and stuff. That's basically it. He's got cannons on his back. He's got guys with cannons all over the place. They shoot at stuff. Then Law and Kinemon come to help. Now, Law is on the ship, but he's like using his powers from afar, you know, room, that kind of thing. And Kinemon does some sword stuff here to block cannonballs. He's, you know, it's another, like, the one thing I took away from this, two things. One is that Kinemon, it's easy to forget that Kinemon is like 12 feet tall. The guy's like freaking huge. And they kind of show that off in this episode. And then another thing is that when Zoro shows up and defeats Pesetta with zero effort, which is like, again, it's very fillery of this Pesetta character, this filler character to be like, I'm going to defeat you, Pirate Hunter Zoro. And it's like, come on, man. No, no, no. And then, of course, thankfully, he just defeats him effortlessly, to which Kinemon goes, I love that man, or something like that. And I'm sorry, that is not in character for Kinemon to say that. That is really weird. He goes, I love that man. Anyway,
I vaguely remember that, but I don't remember. I'll be honest, I wasn't really paying attention to a lot of this episode.
It was jarring. I mean, like, it's just like, I mean, Kinemon likes Zoro, but like for him to go, I love that man, it's just like, what?
Like, yeah.
You don't really know him that well. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, then Bill shows up and he attacks Luffy, Bartolomeo, and Desire. And he's munching on his rocks and he's gonna do some damage here.
We have one more episode.
One more episode, and then we get to see. Well, wait a minute. Okay, I'm gonna look at the rundowns again. We don't have One Piece next week, right? Next week,
correct. But we do have 2 weeks from now.
We do have,
and it's the finale of the filler.
Okay, so we won't know until after November 1st if we're going into the next arc or not. I'm assuming we are, but like we don't know. It wouldn't be impossible for them to be like, well, that's all of the One Piece we purchased up till that. You know, we got Dressrosa, and then they end. I looked online too out of curiosity whether they consider this filler.
Yeah, so how do the seasons work? Like,
okay, I'll tell you. Well, it's not written in stone. It's not law. But what I saw online seems to suggest that this is considered part of the next arc. And I think they delineate that by the fact that we got the new opening with it.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'm looking on Wikipedia and it considers this season 18. Yeah. So if you were to buy like the DVDs or whatever. So if I look, it says like cover art for the home media volume of the season as released by AVEX Pictures would include this. So I'm assuming that means if you're a Toonami and you're buying rights to the season, if you have the rights to these episodes, they must have gotten the rights to Zo already because that's part of the season.
I think so.
Yeah, so I know one thing to remember is like with these long running shows, it's not necessarily cleanly broken by arcs. It has to do with like the season releases by like the publisher. But yeah, it seems like as far as the home media release goes, this is part of the next season. So you would assume that they would have rights to that whole season. So because you're not buying individual episodes and you're not buying arcs. So
yeah, and then when you say that, it does give me a lot of confidence that we're not running out of One Piece here. So I don't know. Obviously, anything can happen, but that gives me some confidence that they do have access to season. So, and that's basically all there is to say about this amazing episode. I mean, come on, we're gonna see an amazing fight next week. You think with Bill? What's Bill gonna do? I have no idea. I don't remember. I didn't watch this. I actually didn't watch this. So. He's probably going to make a bunch of swords come out of his chest or something.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
All right, we have Izumo as best character. She's worth a nomination.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Do you want to put Shima as best character or not? Like
Shima.
Rendo Shima.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
like, he's an interesting character in this season. Best?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it all comes down to what they're doing. Like,
yeah.
I think I have to reserve judgment.
It's more of a plot thing than a character thing right now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's not the best way to put it, but put a tab in it. Maybe we'll see once we get more clarity on what he's actually doing, but
it could turn out to be a very cool character thing, but it also could turn out to be like a rug pretty pull dumb. Or... Yeah, we don't know yet. So,
I remember last week I was considering putting the voice actress for Izumo down, but I don't know. I don't think she ever had really a great moment. Not necessarily the voice actress's fault. Just there was never like a moment where I felt it was top notch.
Okay.
Performance.
No, she's fine. Yeah, it wasn't amazing to me. I mean, well, I hate to say that. I mean, if the voice actress ever heard this, I would tell her she did an amazing job. But I don't know if it like blew me away to the point where I feel like she needs to be nominated as like a best voice performance or anything. But she did a very good job. So
I'm actually blanking on the actress's name. I know I had it last week. I know I can think of the roles she had, but I can't think of the name of the actress. One second.
This was really, I mean, she really brought it. I will say that. I mean, as far as like the character acting and the emotional gravitas of the performance, it was good. It was really good.
Kira Buckland,
of course. Okay. I mean, we could put her on there if you want to. I don't mind.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
We usually have too few nominations and too many.
Yeah, we can always change our mind later. Again, I feel like she did a really good job as far as like really, because there's a lot of, anytime you got to make a character cry a lot, that's got to be hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true. When I think of a character like cry talking, this is probably like a decade ago now, but I remember Agame Got Kill, which is a Sentai dub, And some Sentai dubs have been okay, like Made in Abyss. But I remember, like that main character in that show, who's there's no way I'm remembering that name, or is it Akame?
Well, you talking about the you mean the girl?
Yeah,
her name is
Akame, isn't it?
You mean the one that's dressed like a general?
No, not her.
Oh, not her. Okay.
But anyways, I just remember there was a scene in that show where the main heroine starts crying, and like the actor
I'm sorry, did not do a good job of try talking. It was like the opposite of like being believable. And like, I know they're trying. I don't want to dismiss anybody's, you know, effort. It's just like, I don't think this was very good and probably could have used more takes. That's what, anyway, that my point is Izumo did not have that problem at all, which is probably harder than it, than, you know, a lay person like us would imagine. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Kame ga Kill, unfortunately, to me, is like one of the worst shows because it's so, so bland and so like, try hardest generic is the kind of term I would use to describe it. It's just like trying so hard to be something interesting and it isn't even remotely interesting.
I was actually saying, yeah, I would never remember the character's name, but the character is literally Akame, like in the show's
okay,
name.
Akame, right. what's the character I always, because the other character I'm thinking of is the one I always remember the name of until now.
S-Death.
Yes, S-Death. She's like the most popular character from the show. When people talk about that show, they always refer to her as Death because she was like this like sexy bad guy.
Yeah.
What do we think about any of these Barbie names?
Let's see. We already nominated Bambietta Basterbine.
That's pretty hard to beat. I'm telling you.
Candace Catnip.
Candace Catnip.
Bambietta's got the best name. I think out of the rest of them, I think Candace Catnip is probably the second best.
Yeah.
The rest of them have like the alliteration, like literally the names start with, you know, G's, C's, M's, and L's. But I think that none of them beat Basterbine.
No, I don't think so.
Candace Catnip is probably the best one.
Yeah, we'll put her in. Even if we vote her out. But yeah, that's a pretty good one. Yeah, I'm looking at these other ones. They're just weird. Like Liloto Lampred is just, that's just weird. And then Giselle Gawel is just weird. It's not funny. It's just weird.
I'm not going to nominate, this as like a nomination, but Liloto Lampred was voiced by Jeremy Lay. And I think she did a good job at like the deadpan.
I like that a lot. That's very memorable.
Yeah. I think the character is more too much of a bit character to do like actual nomination, but I just think for voicing, hey, Sheremy, she has other Bleach characters. Like she was she's Ichigo's mom, but we want you to voice this one of these extra characters also, and she has to do you have to do a perfect deadpan, and I think she did a good job, and it's probably fun to act. You know, something.
I bet so. Like it was fun to listen to. I mean, I agree. I don't think it's award worthy because it doesn't feel like it's that important. But I will say that I enjoyed every time she said something because it was just so fun to listen to her. It was a combination of the voice and the things she was saying where it was just like, that didn't work, you know, or something like that, you know, in like a serious, serious moment. She's being very blasé about everything. That was kind of fun. Yeah. Worst moment, Izumo's mom saves the day.
let's put it there. I think that was pretty disappointing. Where's worst moment?
Yeah, I got it.
There's just too many questions about like how that worked now.
It wasn't earned.
Yeah.
It felt like a cheap way out. I feel like the whole season I was thinking Izumo's going to beat this thing. She's going to like, as part of her character's transformation, she was going to literally do the thing that no one else could do and defeat, like take control of the Fox Demon. And that doesn't happen. And just for half the Fox Demon to just leave the story, it's just like so underwhelming and uninteresting.
Are any of these Sterminator powers best powers? We added the imagination one last week. None of them are like, because we had like three or four different powers to deal with. Like electricity, no. Zombie stuff, no. I don't know, it's fun. Weird girl with glutton mouth. That's kind of weird.
She had like two abilities. She had the ability to use her mouth to bite people, but then she also had another ability related to gluttony that I can't remember what it was. I know she did something else. She did it after her power up. But it's not amazing. And then like the other girl was just strong. I don't know. Nothing really amazing there. And the zombie girl, like kind of fun, but we've seen that before, you know, the whole, like it can create zombies. not in this show, but, you know, in other shows. No, I don't think so, personally. What about best character design, Super Saiyan 4?
No.
Okay. I'm agree with you on that. It's so... I mean, just look at the picture you posted. Like, yeah. It just looks not so... That picture, that... Oh, my God. It's like fan art.
Yeah.
Right? It just looks like exaggerated fan art of what Goku should look like. I don't know. So goofy.
This is bringing back memories of like high school when GT was in vogue and people were poking fun at it.
It's like, so. it's too try hard, right? It's like, oh my God, look how amazing he is. It's like everybody who loved, what was the bad guy in that movie that was like big in Dragon Ball? Broly.
Oh, Broly.
Yeah. It's like that. You know, I always think of Broly. It's like
his pecs are bigger than his face.
Yeah, exactly. It's like his forehead's so huge, like he can't even open his eyes, you know. Yeah. Nah, I don't see anything else. There's nothing to nominate from One Piece, so that makes it easy.
Nope. God. I feel like we should have eventually a best character design from Bleach, but I don't know what.
Well, I mean, like, it's the problem is do we count like a character like Law? Who's been around forever? I don't know.
Well, I think if it was a new character, we would.
Oh, right, right.
But if they've been around for a while, which Law has, like, no, we can't nominate him.
Okay.
But like, for example, like Ichigo has a slightly new look, but I don't know if it's really like dramatically different than his old look.
Yeah, so, that's true.
I mean, it is a little different. Like, if you were to show me a screenshot of Ichigo now, like, oh, that's Ichigo in the Thousand War Blood arc or Blood War arc. But, you know, it's not dramatically different than what he's always looked like. Actually, the thing that I want to put here for best character design is I really liked what Rukia's Bankai design looked like. But
okay,
if that only lasted for like 2 minutes.
Oh, so, did she change back already?
Yeah, she's back in her normal outfit.
Oh, well, that's not a disqualifier. We can add it.
1 second. I'm going to see if I can get a picture of it so I can.
Okay. Yeah, this was her like winter wear is what you're talking about.
Her Bankai, yeah.
Oh, her Bankai. Oh, her Bankai look. Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, I really liked how that looked, but it lasted all of, you know,
well, the end
of
she might use it again. I mean, I don't have high hopes, but it's possible. I'm gonna put it in. Why not? We talked about it.
Yeah, we did
before, and we were like, yeah, that looked cool. That's good for I'm cool with that. I mean, she's about to fight some more here. I don't know if she'll pull her pawn guy out, but...
Yeah.
All right. Think of anything else or that good?
I think that's good.
Okay. Well, if you think of something, we can talk about it next week. So, speaking of which, next week is the marathon. However, there are 2 episodes. And I think last week we discussed that we would might as well just do a quickie episode to cover just those 2 episodes.
Yeah, mostly in the service of the next week, so we're not overstuffing ourselves later.
Yeah, so we will be back next week to just go over the finale of Daima. Wait, is that right?
No,
just a normal Daima, and then a Bleach, right? Gosh, now I forget.
Yes, no, that's right. Okay. One episode of Daima and one episode of Bleach.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, that's what, and Seda just posted a picture of Rukia's. Yeah, it's really cool. She's like an ice queen kind of look too. I kind of forgot that.
Yeah.
Like transparent, like parts to it. It's really neat looking.
Like white hair, like crystal type of, like crystalline type of vibe as ice. Yeah. I don't know if it counts as a character design though, because it's like, will we even see this again?
I think it counts. I think it counts. Somebody designed that. Yeah. That's good enough for me. Also, I thought that was, I don't know if it was, I think it was the last episode. It might not have been this episode of Bleach, but I thought it was kind of nice when her brother was like, your Bankai was really powerful.
Yeah.
Like he said something like that. And I think she was like, wow, he actually recognized me. It, you know, it's like meant a lot to her. And I thought that was kind of a nice moment.
Remember that, you know, 200 episodes ago, Byakuya didn't care if Rukia died.
Yeah. I think you were the one who said that in a thread. Somebody did.
I did.
Yeah. That's funny. See, I kind of don't remember that. I don't know if I was connected to Bleach when all that happened. So it is funny to think that like he was the villain, and I think most everyone we know is the villain at some point. But
I mean, there was pretty much a whole arc that was the Save Rukia arc, and she was going to be like murdered, and Byakuya is like, whatever.
I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. Okay. Well, like I said, then we'll wrap up the episode here. So that'll do it for episode 446. Thank you for being here, Seda.
Yep.
And thank you again, Crocodile, for being here. And we will be back next week for a fast episode to cover two shows. And until then, later.